Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Well, it's Friday. We've made it till the end of another week. A relatively smooth week for me, even though I reached the ripe old age of 66. It was a pretty good week. I'm blessed with lots of friends and family, and makes everything pretty special. So thanks again to all of you out there. The wishes on Facebook were amazing. I heard from people all over the world. Thanks again. I love you all. Today is Friday, so that means it's the week in review. And we've had a good week. We've had an interesting week. And a lot of the topics, I think, are going to kind of tumble over into the weeks to come. We're going to talk about Lauren's kids, which was about helping to prevent sexual abuse. And from that, we had a very meaningful conversation in regard to teaching our children about sex and the ramifications of somebody making them feel uncomfortable, etc. Big stuff and important stuff, absolutely, positively. And sometimes I get, one of my grandchildren said to me, you know, Grandma, you can't ask everybody to be able to do that because some people can't talk like you can. And I said, I laughed and I said, I guess I couldn't express myself so great when I was in my 20s either. I said, but that's why we're talking about it, is so that you know it doesn't matter how you do it. It matters that you do it. So then we went to the Bullies to Buddies and the great back of the workbook that Izzy taught us about comparing movies, what movies taught us. And I mean, he brought up The Magnificent Seven and Clockwork Orange and movies that you would have never imagined had lessons in them. See, I guess it just talks to the fact that you have to be paying attention and understanding what you're looking at and what you're reading. Then Wednesday we had some great guests, Mark Brown and Daniel Sohn. They were awesome. But they scared us a little bit, I think. Shelley and I talked about it later, and I think we are a little bit concerned about some of the things that we learned. And I hope you are too, because I think it opens that information door that lets us understand exactly what can happen. Because some of us don't have imaginations like that. We don't even go there. I know I'm one of them. I'm too busy worrying about taking care of people and making sure everybody's all right and fed and all that kind of stuff. And there's people out there that are trying to figure out how to steal the little that you may have. So I think that was a big eye-opener show. And Thursday we talked about somebody that kind of enamored me, Sir Richard Branson. And we talked about his success. But we also talked about how he treats his staff, and we talked about the vacations and the security of your employment, and how many people don't like to take vacation because they're afraid somebody will replace them. How sad is that? So I'm going to bring Shell in, and we're going to talk about some of this stuff. If you're out there and you have anything about the shows that you'd really like to talk about, let me know. And call in at 347-989-0352. We'd love to hear from you. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Renee.
How you doing, babe?
I'm doing real good, Sweetie. How about you?
I'm good.
Did you actually get to do anything special for your birthday? Did you have anybody over? Did the kids? I'm sure your family was all there.
No, I told everybody it was the middle of the week. I mean, visitors dropped by, but we didn't do any. I told everybody I'm too old to be too celebratory on my birthdays now. I just like hearing from everybody.
Yeah, do you like relax I'm just kind of having your own day to yourself, huh?
Yep. We didn't do a lot. Spike put dinner in the oven, and it was nice. But I did hear from all the kids and from people. I think I got over 100 birthday wishes from all over the world. And
wow.
That's a really, really, really nice feeling, by the way. So it was nice to hear from some people that I haven't talked to either in a very, very long time. So that was fun. But I did, two of our Golden Girls are leaving for a 7-day cruise this week. So they called me and wanted me to meet them for lunch yesterday at 2:30. So I met them. So that was fun. And our Kelly, who has been working at the new place that just opened, Trader Joe's, in Wellington, she brought me a gift bag with some of the most wonderful things. She brought me lavender sea salt for the bath and all this kind of stuff from Trader Joe's. And a beautiful little purple plant. It's like little purple forget-me-nots.
Uh-huh.
And so it was nice. It was very, very nice.
Oh,
and funny
sweet.
Story, Rita Romano, who's a close friend of ours, who's the raw food chef, I'm calling her, the number's busy. She's calling me, the number's busy. We both listen to our messages. I'm wishing her happy birthday, and she's singing happy birthday to me on our messages. So then we finally got each other on the phone and cracked up that we were both thinking of each other at the same time. Her birthday is the day before mine, so that was fun, too. So, yeah, it was a nice week. And, of course, next week we'll all be getting together because the month of October we have, like, the newest great-grandchild, Bubby, we call him. His name is Alan. He's the one that was so sick. He turns 1 on October 1st. Then we have Big Mike, whose birthday is October 8th. Then we have Little Mike, who's October 11th. Then we have David, who's October 16th. So we're all getting together for all those birthdays. So I'll see everybody then. And it won't be all about me, which will be nice. I don't care too much about having it all about me. So, so it's been a nice week. And Big Spike is mending well. And Mikey's business is getting organized, or his all the stuff that's been going on with him for the past few years is starting to get a little bit more organized, and I'm helping him with that. And my son Michael is going into his third week at Hippocrates Health Institute next week. His voice is stronger. What he's suffering from right now is lethargy, and Valerie posted about it last night, and I answered her, and I said, look, I said, after 2 major, major surgeries where, according to the doctors, they almost lost him a couple different times during both surgeries, he's filled with poison. He's filled with what your body kicks in to help you survive. He's exhausted. And his sleep for the last year has been so fitful because of the breathing thing. So now he's cleansed and he's just exhausted. And I said, it's normal. Let him sleep whenever he needs to sleep. And everything else will come. And for those of you out there, Shelley and I have talked about detox a lot of times, and we're probably due to do another show on it. But imagine that when you detox, you empty your body of everything. And so some of the good stuff goes too. Some of the survival mode even goes too. And you get, you feel like a dish rag. And there are things you can do to slow down the detox. There are things you can do to help build yourself back up rather quickly. So we will talk about that again shortly, Shel. Don't you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, because I think people lose sight of the fact that detoxing, although it's definitely beneficial to the body, can have side effects, and some of them, and if you don't do it properly, it can be hazardous, depending on how toxic you are before you go into it. It doesn't mean you don't do it. It just means that there are things you can do like enemas and taking aloe and things like that to, or taking milk thistle for the liver. There's things you can do to protect the body and actually assist the detox in benefiting you and not causing other issues. Because if you detox too aggressively, it's like you're not fixing the problem, you're just creating another one.
Right, right. Well, I used to tell people in my entry lecture when people were just arriving on Sunday nights, I used to say, you know, it's like you're racing around a racetrack. And you get going on the straightaway. When you come to a little corner or a little turn in the road, what do you do? Everybody says, you slow down. I said, that's right. You step on the brakes. And you can do that with detox. You can do that by adding in some of the things Shelley just mentioned, or even things that are more comforting, like sweet potato soup or squash soup or anything, quinoa with cinnamon and stuff on it. You can, and a little bit of stevia. So there's things you can do that kind of slow it down a little bit so you make it around that curve in the road. And it is important that you listen to what your body's telling you. And if you are that sleepy, that tired, your body is requiring some more rest. And I think you should listen to it. So, but I don't want to talk about that today because we have a lot of stuff to cover on this past week. Tell me how you felt about what we talked about Monday, about Lauren's kids and about the fact that a lot of us don't talk to our kids about sex, make sure that they understand. I was with a friend this week and I said, you know, how old were you the first time? She's a beautiful girl. And I said, how old were you the first time that you felt uncomfortable when Uncle so-and-so kept wanting to hug you and rub your back? And she goes, oh, God, how'd you know that happened to me? And I said, because it happens to all of us. And
right.
And I said, and did anybody ever talk to you about it? She said, no, because I never said anything to anybody. And I said, that's what we talked about Monday. So how did you feel about what we talked about Monday?
Well, remember, I wasn't really able to talk about it. Yeah, because there were a lot of things that, you know, a lot of thoughts that did come to me that I did want to make comments about. My big thing is that a lot of times kids feel something, they feel uncomfortable, they feel something is wrong, they suffer, they feel like something is happening to them that they don't understand or don't like, but they don't know it's wrong. They don't know that they should
right.
say something to another adult, to an authority figure, something like that, especially if it's a family member or a parent doing to it. That's why I was talking about incest. Because especially the way the parents talk to them, don't say anything, nobody will understand, this is our secret, you're special. So they really confuse the child. And that's why I was saying if in schools, if they talked about things like this, it's a tough subject, but since it is such a prevalent problem in our country, it is something that I think should be addressed. And they should say, you know, if anybody's touching you, even a family member, and it makes you feel uncomfortable, we're not talking about a normal hug. We're not talking about, you know, somebody kissing you on the cheek or hugging you maybe a little too tightly. You know, that may just be somebody that's overly demonstrative, you know. But if they're touching you in private places, if they're, you know, I mean, you have to let a child know what you mean by that so that they don't discourage all touches. Touches are very healthy. Hugs are very healthy, even if somebody squeezes you a little too tight. As long as they're not doing it in a creepy way, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so,
well, that's a good way to put it right there, what you just said, because a kid will get that, a creepy way. Those are good words of wisdom because a kid will get that.
Right. Well, and that's my point. You want to give them balanced information so that you don't create a generation of people that are paranoid of touch, but in the same token, you want to let kids know that are experiencing inappropriate touch, whether it be from a family member or a teacher or whatever, or a complete stranger that they bumped into one day and this thing happened to them and they don't know how to tell people what happened to them, you know, that kids don't grow up with these types of secrets that diminish them and that kind of form a different type of personality as they go older into a victim complex, into somebody who's going to be subject to that kind of behavior from other people then. Because what it does is it puts them into that mind frame, like the mugger who seeks out for the person that's walking down the street with their shoulders, you know, slumped forward. People that go through type of domestic abuse or inappropriate touch tend to draw those type of relationships in. And so it's really, really important to let kids know when there's time to repair the damage, when there's time to restore them to some sense of normalcy about touch so that they don't grow up being so damaged that now this is going to follow them their entire life.
Right, right. And I think that that Shelley's analogy, very sadly, as much as I hate to give energy to this, it's happening every day. It's happening every day. Not having things explained properly, and not having open communication with your kids so that they're okay with, even if they can't articulate it the way it really was. Like Shelley said, you don't want to. You know, you want to make sure that you don't make them wary of everybody that touches them. That's ridiculous. But you do want to make them aware of something that makes them uncomfortable. And I think those words, if this makes you uncomfortable, even just tell me, and then I'll help you decide whether it's good or bad, you know.
Yeah, because there are some kids that are just shy and just don't like being hugged, and that doesn't mean that there's anything inappropriate going on. So that's why people have to be reasonable. First of all, you have to listen to what a kid is saying, and you have to be reserved at first to make sure that you're not getting overly excited, that you're not overreacting. Because if you overreact to something a kid tells you and then it turns out to be nothing, then that kid is going to be afraid to ever say anything again. You have to remain calm, and you have to just listen to what they're telling you and really, really help them to identify whether or not something actually bad happened to them, or maybe they're just a shy kid and they don't like someone putting their hand on their shoulder. You know, but if a teacher walks up and puts the hand on the shoulder and then slides their hand down their back and maybe touches the top of their butt or something like that, then they got something that's not right. You know, and if you get that kind of a detail from a child, then you know that there is something that's not quite right. But if a teacher's just walking over and momentarily will lay their hand on a child's shoulder and then walk away, maybe the child is too shy and doesn't like that, but it doesn't mean anything inappropriate. And you have to help the child to identify the difference, you know. And you can just tell the child to tell the teacher, you know, it makes me nervous when you do that. Can you please not put your hand on my shoulder, and be polite about it, but, you know, to stand up for themselves so that they don't have to be subjected. But this way you're not going to vilify the teacher over nothing. But if something is happening, you can attend to it. So it really is important, like we've talked before, get all the facts. Don't overreact. Respond. And there's a big difference, okay? You shouldn't react to situations. You should respond to situations. When you react, you're out of control. You're volatile. Sometimes you don't take time to get all the facts. When you respond, you gather information, and you respond appropriately. And that's probably the best advice I could give somebody in a situation like this if you suspect something may be happening to your child.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what about the part of the discussion that has to do with when the child in question enjoys it and then feels guilty? And feels that they're a part of the problem instead of the victim. That line of communication also has to be recognized and listened to. The fact that they, you know, because then they think there's something wrong with them. They think that they're the bad one. So when you're talking to them about sex and their bodies and all that kind of stuff, I think one of the conversations that you need to have is that very often, in spite of themselves, they'll feel a reaction, and then they'll think there's something wrong with them. So you need to talk about that part of it too, because that's, you know, all the jokes about men's brains being in a different part of their anatomy is where that comes from. And is, you know, because you do feel like, you know, if I'm enjoying it, I'm as sick as this guy. So I can't tell anybody because I'm just as much to blame. So one of the conversations that you're going to need to have is explaining that end of things as well, that part of things.
Right, but there's a physiological response of the body that sometimes is disconnected from the thought. So, I mean, you've even heard of that with rape victims, that sometimes their body will go into an orgasmic response, and that doesn't mean they're enjoying being raped. It just means that nerves are being stimulated, and it's like an involuntary response. And, yes, and I've heard of rape victims that feel great guilt after something like that. It's like, how did I do that? Is there something wrong with me? But it wasn't an emotional response. It was a physiological response. It was like giving somebody a sedative, you know, a strong sedative, setting them behind the wheel of the car and putting them in the traffic, and they crash and they kill three people. Well, that wasn't their fault. It was involuntary. You know, somebody gave them a sedative. They fell asleep at the wheel. It wasn't something they did, you know, and this tragedy happened. So if we have a physiological response to something because we're having nerves stimulated and things like that, you can't bring emotional guilt into it, like maybe I wanted this or maybe I brought it on or something like that, or I participated in it, because it's just not the case. And kids have to understand that our bodies are a bundle of nerves, and we react to touch. And we can be emotionally suffering because we don't want to touch, and yet our bodies will react involuntarily anyway because that's what nerves do. And they're attached to muscles that react to certain types of stimulation. And it's really nothing more than that. And when you put it on more of a clinical level, it takes the mental participation away from it, you know. And you can still be a victim of improper touch, even if you had a momentary sensation that it was pleasurable, if it's matched up with feelings of discomfort, if it's matched up with feelings of your suffering and you don't want this being done to you anymore, then it's an inappropriate touch, period, regardless of how your body reacts.
Mm-hmm. Well, and don't you think most of us are born with certain instincts? We're just born with them. We just know that if something feels like it's not normal or right, we kind of know. And I think one of the other conversations you can have with a child is to say, when you have that feeling, it's possible that you're overreacting. You don't want to take away from that, but it's also possible that you're not. Any kind of discomfort, whether it's mindful or not, needs to be discussed with somebody else who can kind of put things into perspective, because they're not the one that is, you know, in the throes of it. So, again, it's about more communication. It's about being able to have somebody in your life that you can say, you know, I don't know what I did wrong, but this happened and this happened. Is it my fault? And hopefully they have an adult in their life that can say, I'm sorry that happened to you. No, it's not your fault. I think that we need to talk about this at length. And then hopefully you can say, but, you know, this happened to me when, you know, I part of me liked it. Is something wrong with me? No. That's not you liking it. It's your body responding. So
Exactly.
That's the important part. You know, that's really the important part, is the conversation, is the opening of the communication, like we say about everything we talk about on this show. Keeping secrets is an admirable quality. In some cases, keeping secrets that other people have shared with you that aren't your business to pass on. I like when I have friends that I can say anything I need to them and know that I'm not going to read it on the bathroom wall, if you get my drift. But I also, you know, I also feel like it's important to be able to share things like that and not keep it a secret if you know that it's hurting you by keeping the secret. Say it doesn't have anything to do with you. Let's go there for a second. Say it doesn't have anything to do with you. Say your younger friend, you're 15 and your 13-year-old friend that you walk to school with every morning or you see in Bible school every weekend or something, she tells you or he tells you that something that he's not comfortable with or she's not comfortable with has happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's another dilemma. Do you keep that secret because you know you're the only one that's been told, but you're very uncomfortable with knowing that and not telling somebody who can fix it or do something about it? What kind of advice do we give to a kid about that? Because you want kids to be loyal. You want adults to be loyal. You want to know that if you, you know, like if I share something with Shelley, I don't even consider that Shelley will share it with somebody else. So I just tell her, and it helps me. Of course, now she's got the burden of keeping that, but we do that for each other. But if you're a kid and somebody tells you something, there also has to be somebody that you can share with that too, because that's a hard and that's a wrong kind of loyalty. Loyalty means you look out for people. You not only love them and keep their secrets, you look out for them. And keeping a secret like that is not helping them, it's hurting them. So how would you address that? I'd love to hear Shelley's point of view because she has children in her life, but she's never raised any kids. So I like hearing her different point of view because it's often eye-opening for me. So how would you do that, Shel?
You mean if a kid came to me and told me about another kid? Is that
yeah.
what you're asking me? Or if I was
well,
the kid?
Am I talking
perspective of the kid who found it out or as an adult that the kid went to?
No. I want, this is three parties. The kid that's got the secret, shared the secret with their best friend. Now their best friend is holding that secret and she comes to you and says, you know, somebody told me something and I don't know what to do about it. Do you counsel her to tell you so that you can help? What do you say to her?
Yeah, I would counsel her to tell me, but I would tell her that, you know, I will help her to keep her friend's secret or his, you know, depending on who comes to me, you know, that I'll keep the secret, providing what it is, but tell me what it is, and I won't do anything without discussing it with her first. So I would give her some reassurance that I'm not going to run off half-cocked and do something, and if it does turn out to be something like this, then I would try to help the child that came to me first to go back to the friend. I say, look, this needs some additional intervention. Go back to your friend, tell them that you told me, but that I'm not doing anything until I hear from them. I would like to talk to her myself and see if I can give her some advice on how to deal with this or get her in touch with somebody. But she needs to start talking to somebody who can help her, not just somebody to get it off her chest. You know, so talk to your friend and see if she's willing to talk to me. So I would try to handle it softly in the beginning, because without speaking to the child myself, again, if you're talking a child to a child, I don't want to run off half-cocked, be alarmed, and turn out that there's something being misunderstood. You know, because once you go there with an adult, once you say that an adult touched a child inappropriately, even if it turns out not to be true, sometimes the stigma follows that adult forever, and their life is disrupted. So you don't want to go there unless you're really, really sure of your facts. So I wouldn't want to do anything because a child came to me and told me about another child. I would want to somehow talk to that child. So I would send the message back, look, tell them I want to talk to them. I think I can be of help. I'm not going to run off half-cocked and do anything that's going to disrupt their lives, but I think they need to speak to an adult about this and see if you can set that up. And I think in most cases, the minute they know that there is some sort of calm help out there, they may do it. They may react initially that their friend told somebody, but if it's handled calmly and nobody's going in there and saying, oh, you have to do this and you have to do that, if you handle it calmly around them and don't get overly excited, they will ease into looking for help. Because obviously they're not talking about it at all unless on some subconscious level they're looking for help. They're needing to get it off their chest for some reason. But you have to handle kids like that with kid gloves, because they'll shut down immediately if they think that they're going to cause turmoil in their family or turmoil for an adult or whatever. Then they go into the whole thing of maybe I'm overreacting, maybe I'm making too much out of this, and they'll just withdraw and they'll say that they misunderstood everything or that they made it up or something. So you have to handle kids that are coming out with this information very, very calmly and with assistance, not with anger, like, oh, well, we're going to take care of this and we're going to make sure that something happens to this person. You can't go there because it'll make them shut right down.
Well, and what you mentioned about ruining another person's life with false accusations is always a danger, is always, possible.
Yeah, because many times people do, what we talk about in the show, a lot of times people react to partial information, exaggerated information, without pressing to find out what the truth behind a situation is. People will exaggerate when they feel that they're caught in something inappropriate, and sometimes they will deliberately make themselves out to be a victim because maybe they got involved in something that wasn't right. So instead of admitting that, they go into I'm the victim mode, and they basically throw the other person under the bus for something that was consensual or something like that. And we've all seen these stories hundreds of times. I mean, it happens all the time. And that's what makes it so difficult sometimes to get involved to help somebody. And unfortunately, there are more true victims than there are people that are dishonest about things that have happened to them. But because that has happened, it puts the onus on us to be more careful. You have to really know what you're dealing with. You can't just react knee-jerk and just start going after someone. You have to really get the facts out. And if, in fact, the person is being harmed in some way, then you have to assist them, and you have to bring this person to some sort of consequence. But before you go there, you have to make darn sure that there's actually something happened. And it's tricky. And the calmer you stay about how you're handling it, the easier it is to get truth out of people. When you go in there overly aggressive and like you're a crusader and you're going to do this for them, you're going to do that for them, they get caught up in the whirlwind of your energy, and sometimes they'll over-exaggerate for a lot of different reasons. So that's what I'm saying. I've seen that in myself. If I approach somebody very, very calm, even in a very stressful situation, the calmer I am, the more truth I get out of them, because they're not seeing the need to defend their position or anything, because I'm talking more nonchalantly about it, like, okay, look, just tell me what happened. Let's figure this thing out. You know, nobody's going to get in trouble. If, you know, there may be something that has to be done, but let's just tell me what happened. And when you stay calm like that, the other person will feel more comfortable being honest and just kind of letting things come out, like taking this as an opportunity to get it off their chest without your fervor and your excitement or your overreaction, riling them up and getting them to say things that are an exaggeration.
Well, and all that is true, and I think that, again, no matter how, everybody has a different personality. Everybody expresses themselves differently. Everybody has a higher or lower level for reaction, especially immediate reaction. So I do think that if you are helping somebody else, it's good to sit still in the very beginning and just listen.
Right.
Watch people's behavior. Body language, things like that, and just listen instead of You know, like somebody opens their mouth and says, guess what, this happened to me, and immediately you launch into something that you can relate with that person on their issue. That's human nature. We all do that. But if somebody comes to you for help, and I can't stress this enough, the most important thing you can do for them in the very beginning of opening up is to purely and simply listen. And then you need to digest some of that and come up with a game plan. And like Shelley says, if you react with real high emotions because you're, you know, maybe inside you're churning, you want to go look for somebody and choke the hell out of them, I don't blame you. But you have to keep that under control if you want to take control of the situation. So I want to move on, but this subject is very, very deep. And in all the years that I helped talk to guests at the Institute, I know that this is a much bigger secret and problem than anybody knows.
Yeah, and we're going to potentially have Lauren on the show, right?
Yes, that's our game plan, is to get Laura on the phone. But Lauren talks about child sexual abuse in every, 42 million childhood sexual abuse survivors in the United States. Approximately 20% of sexual abuse victims are younger than the age of 8. Only 3% of sexual abuse cases involving people with disabilities are ever even reported. 90% of sexual abuse cases involve someone the child knows, loves, and trusts. That's, of course, the saddest bullet point on this paper. 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 5 boys are sexually abused before the age of 18. Only 30% of sexual abuse is ever reported. That means out of every 10 kids, 3 tell, 7 don't. The average sexual predator will abuse, are you ready for this? 50 girls before ever being caught or convicted. Those are statistics. Disgusting. So this is a big problem. We are going to have Lauren on the show, and I think that it's really important that this doesn't stay behind locked doors or locked in somebody's head anymore. I think it needs to really, really be talked about. So Tuesday, we had a lot of fun with Bullies to Buddies because we talked about all those old movies and listened to Izzy's comparisons to the movies and what he teaches about the Golden Rule. And very funny, because after the show, my husband says to me, remember that guy that was in The Magnificent Seven? And I looked at him and I said, it's so funny you're asking me about The Magnificent Seven. We just talked about that on the show. And he said, that was a great movie. And I said, yes, it was. I hadn't thought about it in so many years until I read it in the back of the workbook again. And Clockwork Orange and some of the other movies, I loved the comparisons that Izzy did. And I loved that so many things that we watch that are coming from someone's imagination are not supposed to be true stories, but are so close to the truth. I'm surprised. I thought about this afterwards. If I was going to make a list like that, one of the movies that would be in it for me is Shrek. The day that I went to see Shrek with the kids, I left so, I don't know, kind of renewed. And I met with a bunch of friends later, and I said, you all need to go see Shrek. It's good for your soul. Now, the rest of the Shrek movies didn't didn't do the same thing for me. I thought they were cute.
But because of the ending?
I think the ending, the acceptance, the unacceptance, the little king. I mean, there were so many things in it.
Well, the most profound moment in that movie was at the end when she turned out to be what is
ogre-ette.
He? What is? Huh?
An
ogre, right? And she turned out to be a female ogre, and she thought that he wouldn't love her anymore because she wasn't that beautiful queen, and he loved her even more. I mean, that's, you know, she's one of him. It was like he thought she was beautiful. You know, he liked her better that way, you know? And I thought that was great that when the spell was broken, she reverted to an ogre, not to the beautiful blonde princess, you know? And that's what made him happy with her. And it was, you know, it brings about so many things about, you know, beauty in the eye of the beholder and things like that. It was just beautiful. And like you said, in all the different characters and, you know, his best friend was a donkey and, you know, it was great. I mean, I liked all the different characters in there.
The donkey, the relentless friend that was there for you all the time but was a pain in the ass, if you'll excuse the pun.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, you can even relate to that one. I loved every bit of the movie, every bit of it. And the Shrek's inability to relate to anybody, and yet he was so genuinely kind. You know, I mean, he helped the fact that he was kind. He didn't want to be kind even, but he was.
Right, so, because he liked being the scary ogre and thought that that was what he was supposed to be like, but couldn't help being kind despite himself. It was actually fun watching his emotional evolution as a cartoon character. But yeah, they become alive for you when you're watching these movies. It's hilarious.
Remember, we talked about that. You and I talked about that. I said, proof, cartoons now, Cars. You fell in love with the damn. Because they had personalities. So again, it's not about what somebody looks like. It really never is. It is at face value, at first meeting, at first greeting, at first observation, perhaps. But it's really not about that. It always tickles me, and I've said this before to you, definitely, and I may have said it on the show before. Always amuses me when somebody meets me for the very first time, and then we become friends. And maybe we're friends for a very long time. And somewhere in our relationship, they'll say to me, I'll say, geez, I got to go on a diet again. I'm so sick of being on diets. Well, you're a lot thinner than when I first met you. And it always makes me laugh because I never am. It's maybe even bigger because now they know me. They don't see me the same way. You see?
Right.
And that works, huh?
Yep.
That's... It's very, very true. So I loved Shrek, and I was thinking he's doing a workshop. I just got the newsletter, and I think I'm going to email him and tell him how much fun we had with the movies and tell him that I wished he didn't Shrek. But I think when he wrote the workbook, I don't think Shrek was even, I mean, when he started working on the workbook, I don't even think Shrek was a movie yet. But with everything that
movies. That I thought should have been included in his list. Remember the Titans, by the way, was on his list, and that's a true story, incidentally. You had said something about the fact that these are just movies and not true stories, but Remember the Titans is a true story, and that's one of the reasons why that particular movie was so impressive to me, because it actually happened. There was actually a coach that did this and really broke down the walls of segregation, of bigotry amongst the players. And so that movie always impressed me because it was a true story. I loved it. But two of the movies that weren't mentioned that I thought would have been great, one of them is The Breakfast Club, because here you had the popular girl, you had the nerd, you had the greaser guy from Shop, and here they're all thrown together, and the jock and all that. Different worlds apart. Normally, they did not like each other. You know, the one kid used to talk about being bullied in school all the time, the little nerdy guy. And here they're thrown together in detention for a full day, and they're so bored they end up talking to each other. And by talking to each other, they share stories, they share their vulnerabilities, and they find out that each. And I love the ending of that movie. It's like so prophetic when the brainy kid writes the essay for the teacher, and he says each one of us is a brain and a jock and a greaser and a nerd and or whatever, or a brain. I think he called himself not a nerd. I think he called himself and a brain. And it was. It was such a realization movie, is that if you just talk to somebody, you would realize that the flamboyant differences between us are over, they're like clothes. It's just something we put on in a day. But when you get down to the deep part of people, we really all want the same thing. We want someone to care about us sincerely. We want, we want to have a purpose. We want to make a difference, and we all want the same basic things. So the outward appearance and our likes and dislikes, somebody likes dancing, somebody likes playing golf, that's just stuff. But the deep inside, we're pretty much all the same, and that's kind of what came out when they started talking to each other. They all had vulnerabilities. They all had fears and strengths, and I thought that was a great movie showing, how kids can be, can become friends with somebody that would have appeared to have been an enemy just the day before to them, And the other movie was the Ron White story about that teacher. We really have to talk about that one time. I want to do some research because they say that there are schools that have applied his teaching. And when he came into the school, they gave him the worst class there. These kids hated each other. There were always fights in the middle of the class. And by the end of the term, not only did the kids love him and respect him, but he made them care about each other in the same way in Remember the Titans, the same way in The Breakfast Club, because he made the kids talk to each other. He made them, so by the end of the season, they're all looking out for each other as a collective. It's not like each kid trying to scrapple and survive on their own. They started having a sense of unity, a sense of camaraderie. And I thought the message on there was awesome because, again, you're getting these kids that are very, very different and didn't care about each other. They were just trying to survive. And here he made them care about each other just by simply sharing ideas. And it's like pervasive message through all these other movies. And I think they could have been included in the book.
Well, like I said, I think I never paid any attention to when the copyright is on the book. I'll look, though, and I think a lot of that was formulated before some of those, well, probably not The Breakfast Club. That's been around for a long time. The Ron White story, what was the name of that movie?
It might have been The Ron White Story. It was with the actor Matthew, I forget his last name, the one who used to be on Friends that played Chandler. The actor who plays Chandler was the teacher, was Ron White. So I could actually just Google him and say the Ron White story with Matthew Perry, I think his name is, I'm sure I'd...
Okay, yeah, because...
It was an awesome movie, and at the end, they talked about the real teacher, that because he was able to turn this class of... I mean, because some of these kids were becoming criminals. Some of them were violent, and they were put into this class. It was like the worst class in the school. And because he did such an amazing thing of turning his class around, they ended up taking some of his protocols and using it as teaching tools in other schools. But I don't know how widespread it became. Obviously, there's still a lot of schools that are dysfunctional. So I had wanted to research that a little bit more, and then I kind of got off track and was looking into other things. But I was so impressed. I've watched that movie like 3 times, and every time I watch it, it's very uplifting.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like the one with Morgan Freeman where he goes into the school and locks it down to keep the drug dealers out. I think Stand By Me, wasn't that the name of that one?
True story.
Yeah, that was a true story too. But it, it also taught you, it taught me about giving everybody a chance regardless of what things look like at face value. And that's another big lesson. That's a big lesson for all of us. So Wednesday, let's get into Wednesday because we're running out of time. And Wednesday we had Daniel Sohn, who is a regular, and Mark Brown and Alan Holt. We didn't hear too much from Alan. He kind of just listened, but Mark was very articulate and explained things, I thought, amazingly well. I thought he was a great spokesperson. But he gave us a lot of things to worry about as well. He alerted us to things that, even though Shelley and I have talked about identity theft, we've talked about things that we know about. We talked about things that we know people that it's happened to, or it's happened to us or whatever. So our conversations were relatively limited compared to what Mark shared with us.
Right.
And of course, the kids, and I remember thinking when my grandchildren had to have social security numbers, the minute they came out of the hospital, I was like, why do we do that? And I thought it was just a way to the census is really what I thought. And because that's the only thing that made sense to me, because social security numbers are your identification when you start working is what I always thought, for what it's worth. And apparently it was set up originally for those kind of reports, but now it's turned to something entirely different. And as well as I never quite understood how they could come up with so many different numbers and not ever have a duplicate number, social security number for somebody. That still mystifies me. But
I still don't get it either.
Huh?
I don't understand that either, because if the first two are where of the state you were born in, then the last four are the unique numbers, that's only 10,000. Yes, I don't get it either.
Yeah. So, well, there has to be a recycling, when we bite the dust, somebody else must get our number somehow, somewhere. But it's a big undertaking, not the same size it was when it was initiated. So I do think it needs to be reevaluated. And like Shelley said to me later, of course, Shelley is the analytical part of this team, in case you haven't picked up on that. I'm more big picture kind of thing, and I don't get into the nitty-gritty a lot of times of things, but Shell is excels at that. And she said things to me that I was like, oh, geez, now she's making me worry about something else, because I hadn't even gone there. But, it is.
The biggest message to get from that show is, number one, and this is just my recommendation. I'm a big law of attraction advocate, what you think about, you bring about, that kind of thing. So what I took from that show is not to have things to worry about, it's to have things to be aware of. If you worry about something, if you fret about it, you can almost create situations where you're going to misstep. But if you just make yourself aware of the information, don't get overly concerned about it, but be self-aware. Be careful of where you put your information out, and just take control of your own personal situation. Two of the things that he said on the show that I never thought of, which I think is excellent information, is to get a medical review once a year. All right, and he said how to do that. It's in my notes somewhere. But he said get a medical review once a year to see if anybody's using your identity to get medical, to go to the hospital or something like that. Because then that means they're going to have the wrong history on you, and that is a symptom that somebody has gotten your identity. The other thing is, MIB.com. Is where you get the free copy of your medical report. MIB, like Mary Island Baker, MIB. So that's one thing that I had never heard of that before, but now it makes a lot of sense. The other thing was the IRS paying out billions of dollars in fraudulent tax returns, and that's where my criticism came in. Of here now the government is requiring Social Security numbers at birth on babies, but then they're doing nothing to safeguard misuse of that number. If you know that that number was assigned 2 years ago to an infant, how are you allowing somebody who's 38 years old now to use it to get a tax return from working? You know, there should be some safeguards about that. There should be something that associates that Social Security number to a birth date. Very simple. I can't believe that that hasn't been done yet and that the IRS isn't spending more money on setting up a database that it simplistically just ties it to the birth date, because that's going to cut down a lot of the identity theft of using Social Security numbers just with those two pieces of information connected, and then you'd want to have more anyway. But that initially will stop a lot of it when you have an adult using an infant's Social Security number, and that's where a lot of it. So those two pieces of information were two things that I did not know before about the medical and about the Social Security number of babies or children being used by adults. I had heard of other types of identity theft. So, but I thought a lot of his advice was right on target. And again, I don't believe in worrying. I believe in being informed and making better decisions. And then the other thing was about not downloading games on your phone without paying attention to the permissions. Just before you go to where it says install, you get a page, and if you scroll to the bottom, it says this game needs to access blah, 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 blah. And it gives you a laundry list of things it's going to access in your phone. If a game is asking to access your identity, access your accounts, access your contact list, you should back out of the game and not download it into your phone. I've done that a couple of times. Now, I have 4 games downloaded on my Samsung Galaxy S5, and they all have just standard permissions, getting them a Wi-Fi connection, you know, getting them to my device identity, things like that, but none of the other stuff. 2 of the other games I went to download asked for all these other goofy connections, access on my phone. It's like, why do they need my contact list so I can play a frickin' game, you know? So people need to be more self-aware, not to just download stuff on your phone. This is one of the ways that people create apps. They create this fun game so that they can go in and search your information. How many people keep banking information on their phone or personal information on their phone or things like, or passwords and stuff like that on their phone? Now somebody who's created a game app can get all that from your phone. So those are the 3 takeaways that were the most significant to me from the show.
Well, I thought it was a great show, too, and I thought that it gave us a lot of information. And as far as downloading things, even if you're on the Internet, not on just on your phone, if you're on the Internet and you want to go into a site that you can be a member of where you can buy home goods or clothing or anything like that, if you go all the way to the end of the contract, they want the same thing almost always. So my advice is to simply not go there. If you want to get on somebody's website where you can just Google a website and look at it, but when they pop up on your Facebook page or on your emails and you're invited in to look at it and you peruse it and you find out that that's what they want to, it's to build their own mailing list. It's to get more emails and more customers and things like that. So. And your friends aren't going to like it if you do that, by the way, just so you know.
Exactly.
A lot of people, me, and I'm not happy with all that crap, though, that comes up on my computer because other people have gotten into sites. So we're not going to have any time to talk about Sir Richard Branson, but he opened my eyes to a lot of things, and I loved his story. But the biggest thing was the way he treats other people. And, of course, if you know anything about me, you know that for me that's incredibly important. You're only here once. You shouldn't be spending this time not caring and not being aware of what you put other people through. So I thought it was important. I also think it's important when you are a boss or an owner of a company, you should be treating those people like you want to be treated, just like Izzy teaches us. So you see, it's a big circle, and it all comes together. I do want to say that I want to put something on Facebook. For those of you who are on my Facebook page, I'd like any of you that have stories about your own personal survival, whether you have survived addiction, cancer, any other health issues. Maybe you've got your diabetes under control through some methodology. I don't know how you overcame these things. I would just like to hear some nice stories about survival so that we can share some of those things, because everything we share, as a rule, doesn't have great outcomes. So I'd like to be more positive. I'd like to hear the stories of people who have gone Western medicine and survived something, or mom's home remedy. I don't care what it is. I want to know how you overcame something that might be plaguing someone else so that we can open up those lines of communication. I'll be posting that this weekend. For those of you who get on my Facebook page and you have something to offer, I so appreciate your input. But for this weekend, everybody go out and have a great one. We'll be back on Monday. And I'm hoping next week, Lauren will be with us. But I'll put that on Facebook, too. So God bless everybody. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shel.
Thanks, Renee. Great week this week. Everyone have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.